The following is inspired by actual events and is meant for a mature audience. Your hosts are lifelong horror fans.
Listener discretion is advised.
What you are about to see.
It's called the Monster Club.
Welcome to the Monster Club, an honest look at horror movies from lifelong horror fans. Fair warning, you may not have seen these titles. We have spoilers, ho! I am Jethel.
And I'm Tuck.
This week, we're taking a look at
creepy, horrible children.
Yes, little murderous bastards that come at you when you least expect it.
Bastards. All right, so we're going to be covering a couple of things here. First off, you said on our last podcast that little girls in horror movies are always creepy.
Yeah.
What is it about them that makes them creepy?
Well, the little girls made popular in Japanese horror are the ones that with the long black hair hanging down in front of their faces. Mm-hmm. And a hidden face, to me, I think, is just visually disturbing.
It's my understanding that Japanese culture has a thing with hair over the face.
Yeah.
If they're going to represent a tormented a female soul, they're going to have their face covered with their hair.
Yeah, absolutely. We see that a lot in movies, and just in ghost stories in general.
Right, we see that in The Ring, we see that in The Grudge. If you watch any Japanese horror with a female tormented spirit, they're pretty much all going to have their face covered in hair of some kind.
And South Korean, too. I've seen some South Korean horror that's very much like that.
Okay, an Asian influence, then.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
But just in general, just like across the whole span of all kinds of films, they're supposed to be innocent, completely harmless. That's disarming.
We are unsuspecting of their evil.
Right. Or them being influenced by evil. You know, it's unnerving to see a character that is completely oblivious, and then you know that that little child is out to cause damage, to slay them, to stab them, to trick them into getting eaten by something.
How can this cute little thing suddenly start brandishing a butcher's knife and start hacking you to pieces?
It's disturbing. Very disturbing. But to be done well, the audience has to know that it's the kid that's up to no good. If they leave it to the last 5 minutes of the film to find out that it's actually the little kid, then it's no good. I saw a movie like that recently. I can't remember the name off the top of my head.
Then it's kind of like, what?
I mean, it's a good surprise ending, but you lose that, you know, potential for, oh my God, because there's nothing scarier than a danger that the other characters know nothing about. They don't know there is danger.
Or refuse to believe.
Right, right.
It's like, I'm telling you, Johnny's hacking up the cat.
No, what? It can't possibly be Johnny.
You're crazy. Boy. That's been brought into light more recently in the Sinister movies.
Yes, I love those. There's a third one out, isn't there?
Yeah, a third one, I think it's still in theaters. I have not seen it. But yeah, Sinister, the children are being controlled or taken over by an evil spirit. Yeah, a demon, is it Bagul? Something like that?
I can't remember the demon's name. I just know they had a very uncharacteristic look for a horror movie. It was different.
Right. And Bagul, or whatever the demon, I believe that's the demon's name, loves videotaping the kids doing this shit.
Weird.
What the hell's wrong with him? But yeah, it's the whole unsuspecting thing, the whole unbelieving thing. If it is brought up as a shock at like midpoint in the movie, it's like, what?
Yeah, midpoint is a good point for it.
Yeah. Let's go over some of the killer kids.
Okay.
Iconic killer kids in movies. Because there are, in my research for this podcast, there are a lot more than I thought originally. So we'll just go over some of the more iconic ones.
What's your absolute favorite scary kids movie?
Oh.
Creepy kids movie.
You know, I think I'm gonna have to say probably The Exorcist.
Really?
Yeah, with
Reagan. Is it? I mean,
well,
I don't know.
How do you want to define this? Reagan, of course, was possessed. And do you just want to say this is an evil kid?
The demon is evil. Reagan is pure innocence.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, for me, my favorite type of scary movie is where the kid puts on the impression, the persona of innocence, but really they've got a knife behind their back. That to me is scarier than, I mean, it sure is shocking to see a little girl possessed like that.
No, there's a movie that just came to mind that I haven't seen probably in 20 years. I'm going to have to check it again. There's one called Children at Play.
Children at Play.
The logo for it is one of those caution signs that you see on the neighborhoods, Children at Play. So you're supposed to slow down and stuff. But it's Children at Play, and then it has a silhouette of a little girl with a butcher's knife.
Is it called Beware Children at Play?
Yeah, that sounds right.
1989 horror film directed by McCriven.
I haven't seen that in years.
Oh, a Troma Entertainment film. Oh, my goodness.
Done by Troma, God.
Yes, apparently.
Well, then you know it's going to be good. tongue in cheek. I love Lloyd Kaufman. He does such a great job.
My favorite. Absolute top. I think Well, I just recently saw the remake of The Omen. That was surprisingly good. You didn't even know that that was a thing.
No, I didn't know that they remade it.
Yeah, 2006, I think. It was pretty good.
I will have to check that one out. Movie,
but I really liked it.
Omen, of course, Damien, Antichrist.
He is pretty. That's one of the big, you know, old classic greats right there, Damien.
And of course, the ending of The Omen, iconic of the "No, it's only a child."
I hoped for the remake that they would just press through, and because I mean, they're not going to make a whole bunch of modern. I mean, I don't know. I guess they wanted to leave it open, keep it like the original, but it would have been satisfying to see him go through with it.
Did the remake have the nanny hanging herself scene?
Yep. All yep. Right. It's all for you!
It's all for you!
I'm going to have to check out that remake and do a review of it.
That's pretty good.
All right. So The Omen, Damien.
Very, very cool movie.
But you cannot talk about killer kids and evil kids without talking, of course, about the Children of the Corn.
I knew you were going to bring that one up next.
Of course! You can't talk about evil kids without talking about Children of the Corn.
Now, what's going on in this movie? Break it down for me.
All right. Basically what happens, a couple, this is the 70s, a couple is driving across country, and all they see is corn. It's all corn. They even comment on it. My God, it's nothing but corn! And everything on the radio is religious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they start making fun of it, of course. That's actually a pretty funny scene. They're just going around.
But there's no room for the fornicator!
Oh!
No room for the homosexual!
No!
They're just like, God, this is the only thing we have to listen to. And anyway, they come across this town. I can't remember the name of the town. But they come across this town, and it seems to be abandoned.
I remember this.
There's nobody in this town. What the hell happened to everyone? And then they finally come across a couple of kids. Okay, they find a couple of kids, and they find more kids. Well, more specifically, the kids find them. Okay, so come to find out, the kids have all killed their parents to appease he who walks behind the rose, the devil in the fields.
I wonder if he who walks behind the rose is, what's his name, from the Dark Tower series of novels, Randall Flagg. Because I think he's been referred to as that. I think he kind of combined all the big baddies from a lot of his novels and said, well, actually, it's the same person.
Oh, well, that could be then.
Yeah.
But yeah, he who walks behind the rose is a devil-type entity. You never actually see it. But yeah, this couple is fighting for their lives and stuff like that. And they end up burning the field down at the end. Spoilers. Anyway, so that's Children of the Corn. And who is the evil character? All of them. Except for two. A brother and a sister who don't want to be Children of the Corn. But anyway, Children of the Corn, evil. And who are you bringing up next? What?
Well, let's see.
Delightful little bundle of joyful evil are you thinking of?
I guess I would have to say Samara from The Ring.
Ooh-hoo.
She's
and she is admittedly evil.
Yeah. She's the backstory is that Samara had unnatural powers. Unnatural mental powers. I don't think it's ever implied that they're demonic or anything, just that she has unnatural powers in life and then continued to have unnatural powers in death, too. I think that's the whole thing, isn't it? You know, her parents kind of keep her in a room above the barn, away from everybody. And eventually her I can't remember, was her father or her mother just couldn't take it anymore and tossed her down a well.
And the last thing she saw before she died? The ring.
The cover on the well being dragged over the top and then the ring of light around it. So, So through her unnatural powers, her spirit or ghost or soul, whatever, the phantasm that Samara becomes starts putting a visual record of her torment and her existence and everything that's messed up with her mind on videotapes. Yep. And, people who watch them get a phone call, right? Is that right?
Yep, they get a phone call.
7 days. 7 days. It sounds like an urban legend, the way they put it together, you know, which makes it plausible that people go, oh, let's watch this scary videotape, you know, and it actually ends up being, you know, a way to pass off Samara to somebody else so that they don't come for them, you know. Which is an interesting plot device. I didn't realize it until just now, but that gets used again in It Follows. So It Follows isn't wholly original, but pretty damn original. But anyway, back to Ring. I like that, you know, the woman, the main character in the movie, the woman, is proceeding under the pretense that Samara just wants to be put to rest. And eventually she achieves this, but Samara really isn't interested in resting, is she?
No, it's brought up at the end of the movie. Samara is just fucking evil.
Yes, and she doesn't give a shit. She wants to keep it going. And I love that. I love that they didn't say, oh, put her to rest and everything's okay now. And they had this nice wrap-up movie scene, right?
Yeah, they had this
sitting in the back of an ambulance.
I call big happy ending.
And the movie was, you know, the music was uplifting and the sun was coming up. And
she goes back to
okay.
her son. She's like, honey, it's okay. We put her to rest. We buried her. Everything's okay now. And the boy looks up at her and is like, that's not what she wants.
That moment, you just see her face fall.
She wants to murder you! Yeah, Samara is admittedly evil.
In The Ring, you know, unlike other movies with scary, creepy children in them, the kid starts out evil and malicious, the spirit of this child. And by the end of the movie, we're convinced that, okay, now everything's okay. She's at rest and she's a innocent little girl again up in heaven. But no. Then they flip it around on you again. I love that.
She lives for malice and hatred. Continues. She's not living, of course, but yeah. So
what's up next on the list? Bring up.
Oh, let's see. I'm one of my favorites, Gage from Pet Sematary. In the annals of history, the youngest horror movie villain ever, and we're not talking about, you know. There are a few movies out there that are just ridiculous, you know, killer babies or something like that. No, Gage was a horror movie villain at 3 years old and played by the 3-year-old.
This is another Stephen King movie, by the way.
Pet Sematary, one of Fred Gwynn's last movies, by the way. Herman Munster.
Yeah, he's a great actor, isn't he?
Yep.
In that role. His voice. Oh, wow.
He, like, grabs the kid out of the road in the beginning of the movie. Not today, my friend.
I remember that, yeah. Yeah, Judd Crandall is the name of the character.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, what happens in Pet Sematary? Couple moves into a new house, and it's along a country highway. It's not really a highway, but it's a very trafficked road.
It's a two-lane, yeah, that's definitely a highway. Anytime that there's a lot of traffic, it doesn't matter how many lanes it is, it's a highway.
Right.
And very high traffic,
trucks not paying the fuck attention to what's going on. Well, that killer road has killed many pets.
Right.
So they have a pet cemetery down off a trail. Well, if you go a little further up some rocks and beyond the big scary hedges and stuff like that is old Indian burial ground that if you bury anything there, it comes back to life.
Did they ever explain what the deal was with that? Why would the Native Americans create such a place?
Well, they stopped using it, apparently, after they figured out that anything that comes back from there is not quite itself anymore. It comes back basically as a ghoul.
Nice.
Gage apparently eventually gets hit by one of these fucking trucks.
Don't let him go on the road, Lord!
Get him, Lord!
The father, in his grief, buries Gage in the Indian burial ground.
Now, how does he hear about it? Who tells him?
The neighbor by, what the hell was his character's name?
Judd.
Judd? Yeah.
Judd Crandall.
Judd tells him about it in the story. He's like, has anyone ever buried a person up there? Well, why in heaven's name would anyone do something like that?
Sometimes that is what I...
And Judd tries to tell him not to do it. But he goes ahead and does it anyway. Gage comes back, and Gage just wants murder.
Hi, Daddy. Now I like to play with you.
The father is a doctor, so he has, scalpels lying around, apparently. No. It was in his doctor's bag. Gage gets hold of the scalpel and just continues on a rampage of murder.
Scared you, didn't I?
So Gage, the youngest horror movie villain in history.
So what did Gage look like when
he
came back?
Honestly, they did like no makeup on him. He was just normal kid. Didn't even look like he got hit by a car.
So he's completely healed and resurrected.
Right.
Except for
being murderous.
The little problem.
All right. So what do we got next? What do you got?
Let's see. Oh, The Shining.
The Shining.
There's a couple of creepy kids in The Shining. I'm talking about the classic movie, not the TV movie remake with the
croquet mallet. Oh, God, I haven't
seen it. Mallet.
I'm not going to.
Well, it's more faithful to the book, but it's not Jack Nicholson.
Ah.
You know, and as much as they diverged from the book in the Jack Nicholson movie, it's still so fucking good. So I love it.
So we have the Grady twins.
Play with us, Daddy. Forever. And ever. And ever.
The end of the hover. They're just holding hands. Just creepy ghosts, you know.
And then, of course, we have Danny.
Danny Torrance. Oh, and what was the name of his Red Rum character, the one that's speaking to him?
Oh, God, I can't remember.
I can't remember either.
Tony. Tony is the imaginary friend that lives in Danny's thumb.
So is Tony just one of the other ghosts or a friendly ghost? I can't remember.
Don't know. It could be just that, the character played by Scatman Crothers, Dick Harlan, I was trying to explain to Danny, about his psychic ability.
The cook?
Yeah, right? Yeah, he's a hotel cook. I think Danny gave the name Tony to that voice within him that's telling him things. He had to rationalize it.
Mm.
I think that's it. I don't think it's actually named Tony. I think that he just had to give a name to the voice in his head to rationalize it.
Do you think it's just another part of his psyche?
Yeah, probably.
It's the part of him that can astral plane travel. And
yeah, that's what I think.
That's interesting. But it's still very, very fucking creepy when he says Red Rum. And he's just tranced out, screaming this, you know, this Red Rum, Red Rum. It's, he's creepy.
All right. So let us continue. What do we got here? The Grudge.
The Grudge.
Now, some people say, well, The Grudge, well, that, the main antagonist in The Grudge wasn't a kid. Ah, no, we're talking about Toshio.
Yes.
The little boy. Kid. The little boy that sounds like a cat.
Every time he opened his mouth and just sounded like that. So creepy. Have you ever seen the original Japanese?
Yes, I have both of them, actually.
Yeah. Those are always fun to watch, to see the differences and stuff. But
Toshio
it's so
drowned
good.
In his bathtub with his cat.
Yeah.
So what do you think? Do you think maybe the two spirits merged or something like that? You know,
I think
eternally bound to his cat.
I think so. Yeah, that seems very likely. Or that he's, you know, took on hearing the sounds of his beloved cat being drowned.
Maybe.
Along and it just kind of internalized that. But yeah, it seems plausible. Doesn't he walk around as a cat for some of the movie? I think he does. He's a black cat.
Yeah.
Time.
So yeah, I really do think it was the bonding of the cat. Unfortunately, not much else to talk about with Toshio. I mean, he's there, he's sufficiently creepy and stuff, but that's pretty much his only role in the movie. He's there, he's cute, but he's creepy.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. What else we got here?
One just occurred to me. Hmm? It's not really a movie, though. It was a TV miniseries.
What's
In Stephen King's It. Here we go, Stephen King again. In Stephen King's It.
Yes.
The image of Billy's little brother, of William's little brother. I can't remember his name now. I'm blanking on it. But his little brother got killed while he was wearing his yellow rain slicker.
Yes.
And at some point during the miniseries / movie, if you're watching it on DVD, he sees his little brother down in the sewers. And I think it's it kind of luring him further into the sewers. It's not his little brother. But I found that very creepy, you know, that he would suddenly see his little brother down there and he couldn't help but go follow him, you know.
Of course.
Yeah. That creeped me out when I saw that. I was like, but he's dead. You know?
Yeah, but it's a Stephen King movie. What do you expect?
Yeah. It's just, ugh. You know, it was such a horrific thing. And for the creature, this being to use the image of his little brother, that was
Pennywise.
Yeah.
Oh. We all float down here. Oh, Tim Curry.
I really hope that they do that book justice when they do a movie again or whatever
they're in the process of doing a remake.
Yeah, I hope it goes well because I really love that book. I've read it like 20 freaking times.
That's one of the very few novels I've read.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me, I need to put that sucker on my Kindle.
Do it.
Yeah, yeah. I've been trying to think of books that I just love more than anything else. Put them on my Kindle, so I have them always.
Okay, so one popped up in my mind last minute. I did post it on our list. You probably saw it. The Orphan.
Right. I didn't see this.
You have not seen this. I don't want to spoil it for you.
Yeah.
But I will give you the general thing that you will like find in like the trailers and stuff like that.
Okay.
Esther is an orphan, gets taken in by a couple.
Yeah.
The couple has a couple of kids already. But Esther is not what she seems. And she is evil! Evil! And there's also something that she is not what she seems that you'll find out at the end. I'm not going to spoil that for you.
Okay. Now, is it just me, or is that a common... is that a really common... theme where a couple adopts a kid that comes from mysterious circumstances.
Yeah, it's pretty common.
Something horrible happened to this kid's parents, but we're not going to talk about that. We're just going to give them a home of complete love.
I
and
have
joy.
Seen that in a few movies. Yeah, but
I wonder if there's evil. If that's a source of anxiety. No, that's not the word. I wonder if that's a common worry with parents. What if we get a freak? What if we get, you know, a psycho kid? What if he's a, you know...
Oh, yeah. Well, you see that a lot in TV and in movies. What do we really know about the kid's parents? Nothing.
Right.
I'm not going to spoil the
records have been locked. That's always ominous.
Oh, yeah. Well, that also happened in the movie I'm going to bring up next that I didn't put in the thing because it just popped in my mind and I'm going to shoot myself for not thinking of it sooner.
Okay.
Silent Hill.
Silent Hill? Oh, my God. See, I didn't think of it because, to me, the first thing I think about Silent Hill is the games. And I love the games.
Right, but you got to look at the movie and look at Alessa.
Yeah.
The demon. And,
man. She's awful. She's awful.
Awfully good. No. Nah. Oh, no. I've never played the games. I've never played them, but I loved the movie. I mean, the iconic image of, I can't think of the character's name, but the woman who's in charge of the cult. She's being torn in half in midair, and Alessa's just dancing around in a circle in a rain of blood. It's like,
yeah,
oh.
I remember exactly how that woman is torn in half too. That is, I was very
wire.
Surprised. I was so surprised that made it in.
I really think that
Holy
scene
heck.
Was a little over the top. Did she deserve it? Probably.
But that's the thing, though. To stay faithful to the games, you had to go over the top because that's what the Silent Hill games were about. It was about building up tension and more tension and more tension and then just blowing the doors to hell wide open and you see the most god-awful, horrible, tortuous, you know, Hellraiser stuff happening. So was it over the top? Yes, on purpose, absolutely. And it would not have been Silent Hill without that.
All right. So, yes, Silent Hill and Alessa. Evil! The demon!
Definitely. And never cute. Never cute. I think they said that, I can't remember. Okay, in the games, her name is Cheryl. What is the father's kid's name?
Well, no, in the movie, the girl's name is Cheryl, but it's revealed that she is actually Alessa. No, she's
right.
The daughter of Alessa. I'm sorry.
But she's the daughter of, okay.
Cheryl is the daughter of Alessa.
That's interesting.
But the demon itself, the one that actually causes all the fucking mayhem and stuff like that, makes yourself to look like Cheryl.
Huh.
Just to be creepy.
Yes.
All
definitely.
Right. Now, we've gone through a list here. Now let's discuss something that always comes to my mind when I see creepy kid on the screen.
What's that?
Why it's ridiculous.
Why it's ridiculous?
Why is this ridiculous?
Are we talking about as a movie?
As a concept. Let's face it. If Gage, the 3-year-old, is coming at you with a knife, I'm pretty sure you can defeat this kid.
Yeah,
not super powered. He doesn't have big strength or anything like that. He hides under a bed to kill you.
We definitely have an advantage as far as limb length goes. I mean, you just kick the little fucker away.
We can overpower them easily. They
right.
have limited reach, limited height.
I guess adults in movies really have to be kind of stupid once they realize that there's danger.
And
but
it's like
I,
we were talking about before, we're unsuspecting. It's like,
right.
oh, and he can't be evil, let me give you a hug. Why are you slashing my neck?
But once the slashing starts, if they continue to, you know, allow it, it has to be an adult who's unawares. Then it's good. Then it's scary, because I don't think there's anything scarier than somebody who is looking down a dark hallway with a candle or a lamp, and the camera is looking just over their shoulder, and then something looms out of the darkness. It's the scariest when they don't know what's about to happen.
Right. Now, we're not talking, of course, about when, you know, it's demon-possessed and it has special powers or something like that, you know, like Samara or... Mm-hmm. I'm talking about just a regular psychotic kid.
Or a kid who's being influenced.
It is ridiculous. Influenced. You can easily overpower this kid. You're choosing to die, is what I'm saying.
Well, think about it. I guess you would have two instincts working against each other. You have the instinct for self-preservation, mm-hmm. and then you've got the instinct, the nurturing instinct, to take care of this kid. If you see a little kid, some little girl or boy coming at you with a knife, sure, you're going to jump back. You're going to protect yourself, but you're not going to do a flying roundhouse kick to their head.
Bullshit! Boot to the head! That's what
no,
I say.
No. You could kill a kid that way.
Exactly. I am a horror movie guy. See, this is why horror movie guys, sci-fi guys, we're the ones that are going to win in a zombie fight because we know what the fuck to do. Little kid comes after me with a big old butcher knife. Boom! Kick right to the head.
I don't know.
I don't have that problem. Oh, man.
They poison you.
But you know what? It's kind of like the situation with The Walking Dead. They're in a world where this shit doesn't happen.
Right. And it doesn't most of the time. So I'd have to say, between the two different kinds of creepy children, I prefer the supernatural kind.
Oh, of course.
Because I know those don't exist.
Right.
I can retreat to the safety of reality after the movie's over and say, yay, it's not real. Ghosts aren't real. You know?
Right. Now, let's talk about another aspect of these killer kids. Mm. When they get away with it. Again, it's the disbelief. How could little Susie hack up her mommy? It couldn't have been that. It must have been the intruder that she just told us about.
Yeah.
Even though she's covered with blood and she's still holding the knife. Oh, we have to believe her. She's a
Adults go to great lengths, suspension of disbelief, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Just the concept that that little Susie over here could have killed her entire family is just so unbelievable. To us, well, in real life and in movies, that we'll believe the kid and go looking for somebody else.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the first thing everyone's going to leap to.
And you'll notice...
But, of course, we, the audience, have the benefit of having an omniscient, you know, view of the story where we saw it happening. So, it seems incredible that that this little kid's a little stabber, you know, a little murderer.
And you just said that you picked up the bad seed. And you haven't seen it yet.
No, that's like an old 1956 film.
You're going to see this.
So, that'll be interesting to see. I've seen a lot. I've looked at a lot of pictures from the movie, and she looks evil. The little kid in there.
Well, it's not that she looks evil. She's a bitch.
Oh, really? Well, she's definitely...
Evil, spoiled. She'll get whatever she wants, no matter the cost.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, why it's ridiculous, why they can get away with it, unsuspecting, what makes...
It's a perfect disguise for a little psychopath, isn't it?
I'm sweet and innocent. I couldn't have done that.
Didn't you mention to me... recently about the ending to The Omen that fits that perfectly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's even, you know, they're in the church. They're getting the father's in the church getting ready to do the ritual to
He's got the knives and everything.
He's got the knives. He's going to do
been
the ritual.
He's resisting doing this for the whole movie right up to that point.
And I believe it's the priest that comes in. No, it's only a child. What are you fucking kidding me? It's evil. Evil. There's another thing about kids in horror, sci-fi, whatever, that bugs the hell out of me.
What's that?
And it goes back to the instinct that we have to protect the child. It's everything that bad and evil that's happening will stop as soon as that kid dies. You know, give the supernatural creature that kid. And everyone else will be spared. But no one wants to do it!
Have you ever seen Torchwood? It's a Doctor Who spinoff.
I saw a few. I haven't seen the whole thing.
Okay, so Torchwood had this, I don't know, it's not really creepy children kind of thing, but, Jack, the main character, he's faced with this, the whole world is in peril, and the only way to put a stop to it is to sacrifice a child. So the,
do it.
Doesn't really fit in with the theme of creepy children.
But it does go into what I was just saying.
Everyone's going to die anyway unless he does this, so...
I can't.
He has to struggle against...
It's only a child.
Right.
No! You can make another one! What's wrong with you?
Oh, man. I don't know. I think... I don't know. That tie, that instinctual tie, I don't think you would be so easy to...
Yeah, I would. Yeah,
no,
because
no.
I have what they call intelligence.
See, it would take, but I mean, that sounds like a rational decision, but that instinct to protect and preserve young life, that has nothing to do with rational thought.
Mm, apparently. Then there's also the storylines where, you know, involving the adult. This guy's the only guy that could possibly save the world. You're the guy. You're the guy with the knowledge. You need to go and do this thing. I can't. I can't leave my child. Fuck you! Move!
Yeah, get a fucking babysitter. They'll be fine.
You, over there, do your thing or I'll kill your kid.
Do the thing. Slay the dragon. Kill the demon.
Exactly. I can't leave my child behind. Fuck you! Move! I hate those story points.
It wouldn't be interesting if they didn't have
it. It's not a choice between you want eggs or pancakes today. It's either stay home and babysit your kid or go save all of humanity.
But what if something
Interstellar. Interstellar. That was the one. The guy, he had to go explore and find a new home for the humans. Oh, but I can't leave my daughter. Screw you!
Yeah.
I hate people like that. I refuse to acknowledge the greater good just because I want to stay home and babysit.
Well, you can't have them just drop everything and immediately go off the moment the decision is put in their hands.
Sure you can.
Because that wouldn't be interesting. Because that, you know, then you're like, well, wow, he took that mission really quickly. I guess he really doesn't love his daughter at all.
Maybe he's like, loves fuck humanity.
You know, he has to have some, you know, he has to reach that decision. Not everyone makes a decision so fast. So, like, you know, just like that. It's got to come to them over time. Otherwise, there's no time to tell any other parts of the story.
Okay,
you know?
It's not that I don't understand it. It's just, it's done so much.
Well, that's because it's a human thing. You know, we don't always think rationally, and that helps us identify with those characters. What would you do in that situation? You know, obviously you think you would just immediately go for the completely rational choice.
But then again, I keep trying to convince people, and no one seems to believe me. I'm a heartless bastard.
Well...
unless you give me her. Okay,
I would have to say that a movie, a story, a game, any kind of story where the main character is just a heartless bastard that immediately does the completely rational and pragmatic thing would be very, very boring. It would be over so fast.
Okay,
I'm trying to remember another movie that had a creepy kid in it, but
there's lots
it's not
of
coming
them.
To me. It's a common thing. Everyone seems to be really scared of creepy children. Definitely.
And it's for the reasons that we discussed. Oh. They're unsuspecting villains.
Mm-hmm.
They're innocent and sweet. And they're brandishing a knife and cutting my cousins out. I don't believe
adults,
it.
The adults in the room with them are unsuspecting.
Right.
But the
we as the audience, don't give that kid a hug. Don't do it. No.
I think we pretty much raked over the entire.
I mean, there are many thoroughly. Many examples of the kids in the movies. We can go on and on about that.
Yeah,
but I think we've covered the iconic roles, and like you just said, why are they scary? Why they're a little ridiculous? Why they get away with it?
Uh huh. Because sequels.
Yes. Yes, because
pretty
of
much.
Sequels. Pretty much, yeah. Okay, so if there's nothing else to add to this, I think...
Let's wrap it up.
Let's wrap what it
are we,
up.
What are we going to talk about next time, Jeff?
Oh, God. What are we? I don't know. What are we going to talk about next time?
let's do It Follows. That's okay. Recent.
Yeah, that's fine.
And we've both seen it, and I would love to watch it again.
All right, so next week on the Monster Club, we will do our review of the recent release of It Follows.